Hello and welcome to the Deeper Eye podcast. I am Lara Ferris, your host. For many years, I have been passionate about self-improvement. Through this, I have met the best specialists in their field who have given me tools and the courage to pursue a new path. The purpose of this podcast is to share with you everything I have learned through the conversations I have had with these amazing people. I hope these conversations will impact your life as they did to mine. Today, I would love to speak about the advantage and disadvantage of social media and the effect it has on the young adults and teenagers, and understand a little more if and how we could help in that matter, or maybe by hopefully young adult listening to this conversation I have with Shomit Mitter about it. I know that many young adults are going through a lot of stressful situation where they are overwhelmed with what they see on social media, and they are a little anxious about comparing their own life with what is happening out there, whether it's a real life a bit too arranged and manicured life that we can see on TikTok, Instagram, and other social platform. I had many conversations with Shomit, and I don't necessarily each time tell you about who he is, because I just feel that. And I'm maybe wrongly assuming that you know who Shomit Mitter is. I'm just going to remind it here. Shomit Mitter is a leading London therapist. He can teach you how to restructure your life, how to cope with the experience you're living, how to sort a very big issue that you have. He is specialized in eating disorder, finding your way. He is a very calm and wise person, and I absolutely enjoy my conversation with him every week. I don't record them all, but I try to record as many as I can, because I want you all to be able to benefit and enjoy this wisdom he's teaching me weekly. You can get in touch with Shomit directly if you need a more private conversation with him. We will put his website down in the comment. And I hope you really enjoy this conversation with him. Thank you very much for listening to The Deeper Eye. Good morning, Shomit, and welcome back on The Deeper Eye. So good to have you again. And today, I would like to speak to you about the generation of our children and the youngest ones, you know, like any age between, I would say, 12 and 30, really, because I've just been inspired to record this and do this conversation with you after watching a TV series / documentary about how difficult it is for this generation to navigate between the real and the unreal. I'm going to explain myself a bit better. So what I would call here the unreal is all you see on social media, all this sense of perfection that we can see over Instagram, TikTok, and all sorts of TV, you know, what they see, they can't really touch or be sure of what's happening. And yet it mirrors to them like this is how life should be. And then they really compare this life to what they really live, or we all live on a daily basis. And they realize that there is a huge gap in between. And this documentary was pointing out on even these people who pretend that their life is perfect have actually an enormous amount of flaws, but the flaws can be in different areas. So all they show is what is naturally coming easy to them. It can be beauty. They usually people with that are born with some kind of beauty, like they look perfect on screen, even though we have now all these filters, etc. Or they have reached a stage where their profession or their job or their studies have led them to a very successful place. And I have the other side of the coin, these other children who find it much more difficult to find their place in society, to find themselves attractive, to find boyfriends or girlfriends, and to find peace even in their inner home. So what immediately came to me is to have this conversation with you on, first of all, what do you feel about this era, this time we're living? How do you think children of this generation can cope better with it and ground on a day-to-day? I know it's very vague, but if you can just tell me if you thought about this and what do you think you could tell them?
Okay, this is a very big question and a very big issue. And, you know, one difficulty we have in assessing a big social trend, which is not even social, it's a global trend, is that when you're in the middle of it, you can't see it with proper perspective. Yeah. So you can't, I mean, historically, when we look back on this era in maybe 30 years from now, you know, people may take a very different view of it than we are taking now. But yeah, given that constraint, there are a couple of things, I think. I completely acknowledge the level of problem that you're saying the documentary dealt with, which is people get tormented by the gulf between what they're seeing on social media and what their lives are really like. And they sort of feel that they have to aspire to the perfection that they're seeing on social media without sufficiently realizing that what is posted on social media is really a very narrow slice of people's lives, and sometimes not even a narrow real slice. Sometimes it's a fabrication of people's lives. So I think that is a problem, and I acknowledge that. But I want to touch on a couple of deeper things. And what I find much more disturbing things is that when you spend longer and longer hours on social media, there is a very real danger, and I felt this, that your sense of the real changes. So you started off by saying real and unreal, but it's not so much, oh, there's perfection there and my life is imperfect and I want to be perfect like the people on social media. That's level one. But at a much deeper level, it begins to get difficult to distinguish between the reality of what we, you and I, would call real life,
yeah,
and the reality of life in the virtual world.
Yeah.
And you're getting that more and more now with, you know, with the metaverse and so on, where you can have characters that represent you inside a world. And within that world, you can have friends and you can have relationships and you can buy things and build homes and so on. And as you get sucked into that, this is slightly different from social media, but it's still part of this whole, the influx and the dominating influence of the virtual world, that you can begin to live so contentedly often within, and so, you know, with such excitement and such satisfaction and so on within a virtual world, that you really lose touch with the real world, what you and I would call the real world, and thereby lose also the skills that you need in the real world to succeed at work, to make friends, to have relationships, and so on. You become hermetic. You become, you know, your little world with you and your laptop become like a little cave in which you live little dream worlds. And that has a very significant bearing. So there's a practical aspect, which is, you know, as I said, you don't actually foster the skills of socializing and working and having a boss and delivering, yes, a piece of work, etc. But the other is much more unsettling and much more difficult to understand, is that you can be so steeped for so many hours in the virtual world that the real world seems almost unreal, and the virtual world becomes more and more real because your exposure to it is for longer and longer and longer periods of your time. And that can be very destabilizing.
Yeah.
Without the person even being aware that they're being destabilized in that way. And I think that's a very pernicious effect. And I'm seeing the beginnings of that quite a lot now. So I'm just putting that out there. There are many other problems, but I think this is a very deep one.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it is very deep, and it's lived every day. I have children. I have a teenager, and I don't see this on a daily basis of him or them comparing, to what they see on social media. But I see the dependency of, trying to see what's been posted. And it starts from very early morning to just before they go to bed. And I was just curious to know if it is a problem in my mind, because I come from a different generation where this also is new to me. I was wondering if for them, because they are born and used to this way of living, if they are even aware of it's a problem. I don't think they're aware of it. They just take this pain that they live as a normal feeling.
Yeah. You're talking about the pain that they live, but there's another effect, which is, it's a strange word to use, which is stress. Now,
yeah.
A lot of kids think that they're relaxing when they're, scrolling in social media, but actually what their bodies are excreting all the time is a stress hormone, is cortisol, because every time you go to a new post or you have to raise your game to come to grips with this new phenomenon that is on your screen. And then you move to the next thing, and you have to raise your game again to deal with this next thing that's on your screen.
Yeah.
And so on and on and on. So every time we have to raise our games, we release cortisol, which is a stress hormone. Now, in the short term, the stress hormone makes us feel quite good because you feel quite alive. Stress is not necessarily a bad thing. It means you're just more abundantly alive in the face of having to do something. You raise your game, and we all feel good when we raise our game a little. But as you do that repeatedly, and you're not giving yourself the downtime that you think you're giving yourself, everyone says, oh, I'm going to just relax by going on Instagram or TikTok or whatever. Actually, when you go from one TikTok video to another, to another, to another, to another, each time you shift, you're raising your game to get your head around this new paradigm. And then you move to another TikTok, and you've got to raise your game to get your head around that new paradigm. You get an excess of cortisol, and there's no down. You're up, 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 up all the time. And you feel quite good for a little while being up, 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 up. But then it becomes an addiction. And then actually becomes counterproductive. You get tired and tired and tired and tired, but you can't wean yourself off it because you also want, and this is the trap, you also want the dopamine hit. The dopamine hit comes from, I want to know what's on that next post. And when you satisfy that need, you get a dopamine hit and you feel good. So you're getting cortisol, upping your game, dopamine, feeling good. It's addictive. And then you want more and more and more and more.
Yeah.
And that's when it becomes very, very, very tiring in a very soul-sapping way. And you often see kids completely in the grip of this. They're completely exhausted, but they can't stop doing it.
Yeah. The problem here, Shamit, is their fear of missing out when they're off this way of communicating with the world. There is always this feeling I hear that if they miss a post, they miss an information, or because they also get a lot from social media, a lot of information to either their social life, or if they're interested in a particular sport or activity, they get, this is how they get their information from. And I feel this fear of missing out in my days was just to say no to a dinner or a party. In their case, it's just, scrolling and getting all these information. Do you have any views on that, like this fear of missing out in general?
Yes, absolutely. You're absolutely right about the fear of missing out. But there are two, you use the word information.
Yeah.
You know, if I don't go on social media, I won't get the information.
Yes.
As though it's the notice board at university where the names of the new, you know, of the rugby team that is going to play in the next rugby match is going to be posted. And also, I need to go and look at the notice boards to see whether I'm playing or not. That is information, and it's essential information. Uh-huh. But a lot of, I mean, I would venture to say the bulk of what, you know, I'm saying kids, but this is anything up to, you know, 25, 30 even. A lot of the stuff that they are following is not information at all. You know, it could be information. And so you need to be up on it, up on it, up on it, up on it. But actually the information, the useful information value of something is minimal. And I say that for two reasons. One is that a lot of social media, there's no quality control. So you may feel that you're getting a lot of information about some health issue or some this issue or that issue or something social or this or that. But actually, it's not necessarily wise information. And often what passes for information or the hunt for information isn't that at all. It's just making sure I don't miss out in the event. Sometimes very unlikely event that something useful should turn up. It's like I'm constantly looking for that one nugget of so-called information that may come up. But in order to get that one nugget of information, I might spend hours and hours and hours browsing through things that have no information value at all. So that's one aspect.
Yeah.
And the second aspect is not so much to do with information. I just picked on that word because you used it. But it's being a part of a club. We all want to belong. I mean, I you know, for example, children or not just children, I mean, even adults who belong to who support a football club and there's a match, they always talk about we played very well as though they were in the team. They weren't in the team. They were just supporters. But they always say we because that's the club. That's the belonging. You know, I'm an Arsenal supporter. I'm a Chelsea supporter and I belong and it's my blood. And I have all these other people who are Arsenal supporters and we all belong together. There's a clan. And human beings have always belonged in groups, right back to the days of tribes where we belong to this tribe or this clan. And, you know, and social media has that. It feeds that, but again, in a all-encompassing way. So you're absolutely right. For you and me to belong in a club, it's to go to the dinner party of, you know, with all our buddies, and then we, you know, we register our presence, you know, we share and talk and laugh and, you know, etc. But that is, even the most sociable of us, that would be relatively infrequent compared to being on a string of posts or whatever, which is the virtual world, which demands your belonging, your participation all the time. And this is not just social media as in TikTok and so on. It's even WhatsApp groups, you know.
Yes, yes.
They ping all the time. I mean, I've taken myself off many of my alumni WhatsApp groups because they ping all the time.
Hard.
At the end of a day, you could have 100 or 150 messages. And it's impossible to keep up. And what that feeds is that sense of belonging. Yes, I was at this school. Or I was at that university. And this is my clan. And I'm part of that circle. And I belong. And I, you know. But actually, they're sharing jokes or they're sharing, you know, sort of the same jokes that circulate. There's absolutely nothing useful there in terms of belonging. There's no real sharing going on.
Don't you feel, Shamit, that, you know, because I really resonate to this last example you gave. I'm part of several WhatsApp groups that are different provenance. You know, one is just a spiritual course I attended. The other one would be some people who share where to go on a holiday with the children. Some other is a special need parents association, whatever. And every time I feel so overwhelmed with this, even though I put my phone on silent, this huge amount of text coming in, and I want to get myself out of the groups, but I don't have the courage. I don't have the courage to do that. I don't know where this is coming from deep down. Like, am I worried to, you know, to be forgotten or to miss out, or I don't know. but I just sometimes archive them and then bring them back. And I don't feel good about this feeling at all, you know, that I don't have the courage to get out. And I know that my children are the same in so many of their, you know, activity, numerous amount of things they're part of. And I think that it stresses them a lot.
Yeah. This not having the courage to get out is a very understandable thing. If you go back to the to belonging, it's a very primal paradigm, by which I mean that it is by belonging in a tribe or a family or a social group that our security lies and has always lain ever since the beginning of time. I mean, you know, so from, you know, if you were alone in the savannah, you wouldn't stand a chance against the lion. But if you're a group or a tribe, then, you know, then you feel more protected, you feel supported and so on. So belonging with it, within some group is always a sign of our safety. And we belong in concentric circles, in groups in concentric circles. So there's the immediate family, there's the social group, there's, you know, sometimes, you know, nationality is, religion is. These are all various groupings that we belong in. So there's that primal association between belonging and safety. So when you take yourself off a group to which you belong, even if you know that it's not terribly healthy and there are all these messages pouring in and so on, there's that slight sense of misgivings about it. It's like I'm endangering myself because then I will not belong and I won't have the protection and the help of these people. So it's if you think about it, one of the ancient forms of punishment in many societies was exile. You know, you offended the king and you were sent into exile.
Solitude, you know.
Why was exile such a big thing? Exile was a big thing because it meant that you were no longer able to belong in the social group that would protect you.
Yeah.
If you think in religious terms, the same thing, there would be excommunication. It was the worst thing, is that you would be thrown out of your group that was your religious group.
Yeah.
And then you wouldn't have the protection of that, you know?
Uh-huh.
So exile, excommunication are all things that punish you by taking away your belonging. And this goes back, you know, hundreds and thousands of years. So little wonder that you feel a sense of hesitation taking yourself off WhatsApp groups or whatever. But what's the answer to that? The answer to that is to be discriminating, to actually say, you know what, I do have, yes, I acknowledge I do have a primal sense of the need to belong, yes, but actually belonging within this group is not optimal. It doesn't really serve me. And I can take myself off without really compromising my safety and so on. That's one level. The other is to keep a group going, but to dip in and out of it as you please, and to have the strength of mind to do that. It's a bit like exercising the right to say no to a dinner party. I don't have to go to every dinner party I'm invited to. I may actually choose to say no, and I do it judiciously. I do it to suit me. I decide how much I belong and how much I don't belong. I decide how much time I spend with people and how much time I send away from them. And similarly, you can do that with the WhatsApp group as well, or, you know, whatever these things are.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good good idea. I mean, it's just, I think it's the second suggestion you gave would give you also a bit more time to realize if you're not checking them often enough, then you know that you can easily live without them.
And exactly.
Maybe, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I belong to one WhatsApp group, which is a very useful one, which is on our road, where we all help each other, right down to things like, does anyone know a good plumber? Does anyone know a good carpenter? Or, you know, can you please, I'm not going to be home. Can you retrieve that parcel from my door? And we all help each other. That's very good. But it's on silent, so it doesn't ping every time someone posts something. And I can, you know, I can avail of it, or I can scroll through it. And if I don't know a plumber, that's fine. But if I do, it's up to me how much I participate or not. You know,
that's
great. No one castigates you. No one gets upset if you're not posting on it all the time.
Yeah, that's another thing as well, is that if I feel like, oh, I should participate because otherwise I'm not going to be appreciated, it's something within me that needs to be addressed. I mean, I don't want to go into that now, but I know exactly what you're saying. The other point that I'd love to have your opinion on is when I call them children, but they're not really children at the age of 20 and above. They're young adults. This documentary as well was pointing out that they come more into nowadays, they come more to a place where they are completely in disassociation with who they truly are. They just have to follow, you know, what society has guided them to do, university, then maybe, parents pushing them to be something they don't really love to do. And that more and more, these young adults are waking up to just deciding to actually follow their own dream and not what they have been raised or told to do. Do you believe it's a good thing? Does it give you hope to think that these young adults have more awareness about following what they feel is good for them rather than what society has expected of them?
What I can't say with any certainty is that there's a much greater independence of thought in this generation than in prior generations, because this tussle between do as your parents say and actually no, do as your heart says and how you wanted me. That tussle has been going on for decades and decades and decades and hundreds of years. Yeah. I mean, I too was part of that, where my father wanted me to, you know, do economics and mathematics and business and get a proper job like he had. And he was, you know, in the corporate world and very successful and wanted me to do that. And I always wanted to do this kind of thing. And so there was that tussle, and then I stood firm by what I wanted to do, and I did what I am doing now. Sometimes that goes badly, sometimes that goes well. In my case, it went well in the sense that he was very understanding about it eventually, though he was initially pretty worried.
Yes.
So that's an ancient tussle. Whether the younger generation today are more liberated in their thinking, I don't know. I'm not really qualified to say, but I think there may well be a point in what you're saying, which is that perhaps they are there, because again, these are the pluses of social media and stuff like that, where more things become available to you than the ancient. When I say ancient, I mean the prior paradigms.
Yes.
People who say, "Well, my father was a doctor, so I must be a doctor because that's the only world I know." Or, my father was a whatever, or my mother was a this, and I'm going to grow up to be this. Nowadays the world. The wider world comes into your mobile phone or your computer much more easily. And yet I wonder how much of a wider world it is, because of course what you're getting on your phone and your computer is also very much a function of what you're following. So you get limited into a little bubble of your own making. And yes, it's not of your parents' making, but it is a little bubble nevertheless. But still, I'd still take your point that there could be something in it. But the second point, which is it a good thing? And I think it is. I think it is a good thing if the younger generation or any younger generation thinks for itself. And I think the challenge for a parent is to be able to give a bit of guidance, because without guidance, children go, get lost.
Uh-huh.
But then to leave the child free to make up his or her own mind. That balance is often difficult to get. Often parents get overly concerned and overly controlling as a result of being concerned. No, you must do this because it's good for you. And then children have to fight for their freedom. And then in the fight for their freedom, sometimes they start insisting on outlandish positions, not because they seriously believe that those things are good for them, but because it represents the opposite of what their parents want. The tussle becomes one of power rather than of, cool, headed thinking about what is the optimal course of action going forward in life. So I think independence of thought is a very, very good thing. Whether there's more of it today or not, I don't know. But it's certainly a good thing. But it has to be fostered with the right balance between guidance and freedom. Guidance from the parent, this may be a good idea, think about this. And freedom to actually back the child, again, I use child in that broad sense, in doing whatever he or she wants to do going forward. And let them make their mistakes, let them fall down, let them learn, let them grow through their own lives rather than preaching to them that this is the only way.
Yeah. And by giving this freedom, you also show a form of respect that I believe that you can do it, even if it's going to lead you to you know, it's not necessarily a success from the first time, but you can do it. I mean, that's what I feel. I wish I had when I was a young adult, this sense of being trusted for following what I feel is right for me. So I totally understand what you...
Yeah, that's a very big point, this trust thing. Because when a younger person is trusted by their parents or their elders, they feel very good. It's very good for self-esteem, very good for confidence. And that self-esteem and confidence are very fundamental parts of the mindset that does make for success. You know, a younger person could be on the so-called right path for them.
Yeah.
But without the confidence, they may not make a success of it. So to trust them is a good thing. But also, when you trust them, they are even more mindful of not losing that trust because they value it.
Yes.
And they can be even more assiduous about going about their, you know, their projects with concentration and application and dedication and tenacity, more so than they would if they were being made to do something that was supposedly good for them, but that they didn't believe in, or if they weren't being trusted to do the thing that they would, that they did believe in.
Shamit, finally, I would like to know, please, if you could share with us, how would you address a young adult feeling completely lost and questioning all the decisions? You know, there is a period after university and the working world of this generation, where they maybe choose a job or think that they are completely ready for it, and then realize that maybe it's completely the wrong avenue they took, and they're completely doubting their decisions. And how would you address somebody, whether it's a young adult, do you address the same as a mature adult coming to you and thinking they completely are on the wrong path and they don't feel confident in it and not good about it?
Sorry, just rephrase that by going to the heart of it. The heart of the question is, how would I deal with a young person?
Yeah, like how would you help them see clearer when they realize at some point of their path that they maybe got it wrong after uni, whether they chose the wrong job or they don't feel good enough for, you know, being completely left in this world of adulthood?
I mean, this is something that I feel I'm well qualified to help people with, because I did this myself. I mean, I taught at university for a while, and then I qualified as a therapist, but I then got sucked into helping with the family business for a bit,
yeah,
which is a trap into which a lot of Indians fall. And I did that for some years. And initially, it was very exciting because it was a challenge. I'd never done anything like that before. But after that, I found that, you know, it really wasn't me at all. You know, I was picking up my corpse every day and taking it to work and picking up my corpse,
yeah,
every day and bringing it back home. And that's when I realized that, no, I had to break with it. And much as it was very lucrative and comfortable, I decided, no, this is not my life. And what I really wanted to do was the work that I am doing now. And it was quite a big decision.
Did you feel a losing confidence at the same time?
No, I didn't feel losing confidence at the same time, but I felt losing purpose at the same time. You know, all the time I was thinking, why am I doing this? There's more important things to be done, like what I do now, which is helping people and so on. So I took that step, and no one, no member of my family or no friend was supportive of that, because they sort of thought, you know, come on, you know, there are many therapists out there. Who on earth is going to come and see you? And here you are, you know, it's comfortable, there's a big business here, it's lucrative, why are you giving this up? And it takes a bit of courage to do that.
Yes.
But yes, when younger people come to me, or even older people come to me wanting to change direction, I do help them. And I help them by checking in with them as to what they really want to do, which they're not being able to do because of some pressure or the other. Often they are aware of it, but they're not doing it because they feel that they're under obligation to their parents or their families or whoever to do something that's more lucrative than the thing they have in mind. Or in more difficult cases, they're not even aware of it. And sometimes one has to find that and help them find that. But in all cases, many of us, and I include myself in that, have taken wrong steps along the way I don't think they're wrong steps because you gather experience, but they feel like wrong steps because they're not in alignment with something that is, you know, something that we could do that where we would be true to ourselves. So I always say that finally what you're looking for is three things. You're looking for something that you're passionate about, that you care about, because finally there are very few people who are really successful in an area that they don't care about at all. Secondly, it has to be something that you have a talent for. It has to be within a skill set. I mean, I may be passionate about putting rovers onto the planet Mars, but I don't have the skill set to be able to do it. So that's the second thing. You know, passion is the first thing. Second is skill set. And the third is, I do believe that, especially for younger people, it has to be lucrative in some degree. I'm all for charity and doing charitable things when you're older and so on. But initially, you do want that exchange of energy. You do want to feel good about having done something for which you got paid. Doesn't make you greedy. It just makes you feel good about the fact that what you did was worth this to somebody, and they were willing to part with some money in order to elicit your competence or your skill or whatever. I think so. Those three things.
That's how you build confidence.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's it. It's basically more or less the same way than you would address any person. You know, whether it's a young adult starting.
And I've done this with many people. Many people have either come to me out of university saying, "I don't know what I want to do," and etc. Or I've also dealt a lot with people later in life who have, you know, there was a client of mine who was working for a chartered accountant's firm and felt it was a dead-end job. And he was very passionate about a particular thing and he wanted to set up a business. And I helped him make that transition, which was to leave what he was doing. It was terrifying to set up a business. And now he's extremely successful. He's one of the biggest players in his area in the country. And I still see him, and I started working with him about 20 years ago, and I still see him once every 2 weeks because he still checks in, because there's the next step in the business and the next step in the business and, you know, growth and this and that and decisions and so on. That's not to say that anyone coming to me would be with me for that long. I mean, some people just come check in for a bit and you know, then go their own way. But there are many cases where they stay, not because they are terribly troubled, but because it helps them grow.
I think the exchange between you and the people that would come and see you, for me anyway, I mean, I'm of course not somebody who knows the absolute truth, but for me, I see it as, you know, just doing yoga for the body. I just can't imagine, you know, why would I stop having these conversations with you, because they help me in this continuous understanding and evolving and awareness. That's personally how I see it. It's not like, you know, wanting to be in conversation with you or in therapy or whatever it's called. It's not because we only have a certain issue that we want to sort. It's a form of evolving.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, right.
Yeah, for me, it's easier than...
I mean, a lot of people come for, you know, they've got a problem and they want it fixed and so on. But a lot of people then carry on wanting simply to grow, as you say. And it's very interesting. Some people call what I do therapy. A lot of people spontaneously call it, I'm really sorry, I'll have to cancel my lesson tomorrow. You know, they think of themselves as students. And I love that. I think that's wonderful.
That would be me. I always say, now I have a lesson on Monday morning. Thank you so much, Shomit. I really appreciate that, your time and all your advice always.
Thank you very much. I love our chats advice. And I love the fact that we do this. This is wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Shomit. And I'll see you next week.
Absolutely.
Have a good week.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Thank you very much for listening, and we hope you enjoyed and benefited from this conversation about how to ground young adults, children, how to try and help them to be aware of how is social media affecting their well-being and their life and their decisions. Thank you for sharing this podcast with as many people as you can think of that would benefit hearing this conversation. And I was very glad to have Shamit again. And we look forward to our next conversation, and we look forward to sharing it with you. Thank you very much for subscribing to The Deeper Eye, and we hope you like the podcast. And again, please share it. Thank you very much.